you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Well, this is a real treat for us on Launch Street. Hey, Tamara here, your host. So here's the deal. Every now and again, and this does not happen often, I get a request from a PR firm for a guest interview for someone to be on the show. So they often reach out to us, right? Because our community is so awesome, we get these incredible people. Every now and again, the guest that the PR firm is suggesting to us is someone that has written a book or done some work that my team and I have actually already read and loved. Like whatever experience they brought to the table, whatever book they wrote, whatever work they do, we found them before, put their stuff to good use. So then by the time they get on the show, I already know exactly who they are. It's so exciting. So before they even appear on the show, I have admired and used their work. And today's guest is one of those moments. And the part that I think is really cool about this is not only does it add a level of validity, I mean, we know that all our guests are incredible and the work they do is incredible. We vet them pretty hard before we'll allow them access to the podcast of any kind or interview them because we want to bring you the best. But there's something more personal and more insightful. And I just think more of a connection when this happens because I already know their stuff intimately. I've used it. I have kind of personal experience to pull from. So I kind of know even more so what to ask and where to guide the conversation to get you the most value out of it because I've used it. So I just think it adds a more personal level. And I think you'll hear that in this podcast. Before I tell you who the guest is and what the work is that they do, let me tell you a story of overwhelm and frustration. It's actually the reason why we leverage this person's book and work and everything that he does. So there was a time, probably about a year ago, where I was working 7 days a week nonstop. And I just, there wasn't a day when I wasn't doing some work. And I was a fireball on the edge of burnout. And don't get me wrong, I love what I do. So I'm not one of those people that feels the need to go on a vacation to get away from work. I go on vacation or I take a day off because I have other priorities in life too. I have kids, I have friends, I have hobbies. And frankly, sometimes our minds just need a break, right? You know how it is when you work nonstop, even when you love what you do. I think that downtime is just as important. But I couldn't get that downtime. I had to open up my computer and do stuff every single day for hours and hours a day. And then I had this experience where it all kind of came to head where I was working for a client. I was actually up in Toronto or in Toronto area. And I travel a ton for work. I go from hotel to hotel because either, you know, I'm keynoting or I'm doing a workshop with clients where, you know, I'm going out to their offices and we're tackling their biggest challenges and finding them new opportunities and kind of putting that lens of innovation to their work. But either way, that all requires me to be on the road. And I had been at this hotel for 2 days. This is the second day that I'm there, right, leading to the second night. And I've been with a client for most of the day, had a great day, got off the elevator, and I'll never forget, I'm standing there with my work, very heavy work bag in hand and my key card, and I can't for the life of me remember which room is mine. And keep in mind, I've been in this hotel for 36 hours already. Like I've already been to my room multiple times. And I can't remember. I cannot in any way remember what the number is. I have nothing to pull from. So I have to go down the hall and put my key card up to every door and wait for that green light. And you could hear me shuffling. It'd be like, I'd go up to the door and be like, click. Nope. Shuffle, shuffle, click. Nope. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. I think there were like 50 rooms that I went through before I found mine. And when I got to my room that night and finally got through the right room and in, I realized that I was on the edge of burnout. But there was a bigger issue. It wasn't just that I was overworking or I was a workaholic. What I really realized is that the business was working me. I wasn't working the business. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like when the systems and the business and the process, all of it like has control over you, not the other way around. And I think whether you are a business owner or a leader inside a business, I think you know what I'm talking about. And that's why I know that today's guest is going to be of value to you because we really dig into that. So let me talk about today's guest. So his name is Josh Fonger, and he is a consultant, coach, and speaker who is recognized as the leading authority in business performance architecture. Now, that sounds like a really big phrase, but let me tell you, this is all about how to set up the systems and the structure to work for you, not the other way around. And Josh has personally consulted or coached over 600 business owners from more than 100 industries, from small startup businesses to $500 million enterprises. And I think due to his phenomenal successful rate and the mountain of client testimonials, he has quickly become one of the most in-demand small business consultants in North America. So in 2011, Josh connected with Sam Carpenter after reading Sam's book, Work the System, The Simple Mechanics of Making More and Working Less, and recognizing their shared vision of helping business owners get unstuck using systematic solutions. Josh and Sam partnered to work in over 50 countries and do incredible works. I think one of Josh's greatest strengths is helping businesses properly organize and systematize their operations so that they can achieve exponential growth. So that was a mouthful what I just said, but here's the thing I want you to think about. The book Work the System by Sam Carpenter is the original book that we read. Josh took his work and started applying that, not just to his business, but to other businesses out there. So Josh is the one out there really making that system work for people. And again, that system, whether you are the owner or inside a business, can completely transform your world. It has done it for us over here at Launch Street on a personal and professional level. Not only do I get days off now, woohoo, but those systems actually allow me to be innovative. And in fact, before we dive in, I want to give you one thought that I actually talk about a lot of my keynotes and workshops, and I think this interview puts the spotlight on, and I just started to allude to it. It's that structure can foster innovation, that systems actually give you room for innovation to happen. I think there's this myth that one hinders the other, and this couldn't be more untrue. If a system is done right, it actually removes the mundane and gives you the space to innovate. So I talk about this in my conversation with Josh. I actually share personally how the systems have impacted us. I know you're going to get a lot out of this. I've talked enough. Let's get to it. Josh, thank you so much for being here. As I mentioned to you offline, I am pretty excited. In fact, my whole team is pretty excited for this conversation.
Me too. I hope I don't disappoint.
Yeah, I doubt it, given our conversation offline already. So, but since we're meeting for the first time, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, I think the one thing is that we're a very strange family, but strange on purpose, and we homeschool. So that usually sticks out. People always ask questions and wonder why we're weird like that.
I'm glad that you own it though, because sometimes I do feel like people hide it and then they whisper it to me like, we homeschool. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what to do with that now that you whispered it.
So other than that, we're pretty average folks, but that's one thing that makes our lifestyle a little bit more unusual.
I feel like we could have a whole nother podcast about why, but we have some system stuff to dig into today. So we'll come back to that offline. I shared a bit of your background on kind of where Work the System came from and kind of the work that you do. I'd love to hear the story and have listeners hear the story. I'm curious, what drove you to connect with Sam, who wrote the original Work the System, and not only just take it on for your business, but actually begin helping other businesses work the system too?
Yes. And I'm going to try to make this story really sharp. But I was doing traveling business consulting just all over the country, always on airplanes from location, location, location. And I was getting really burned out. I was always with the flooring stores. So I'd help them with their inside sales and outside sales and their strategy and their financial forecast and their marketing, their hiring, firing. It was burning me out. And I was living in Bend, Oregon, and Providence, act of God, you call it what you will, but I ended up hearing about this guy named Sam Carpenter, who also lived in Bend, Oregon, and a woman at a lotion shop gave me his book. And I said, well, I'll check it out. And I read it, and I said, hey, this guy, is in town. I met him for coffee. We hit it off, and then I eventually pitched him on an idea of starting my own company a few months later, and he told me that I was crazy to do it, and I should never do it, and it was a really bad idea. And we didn't talk for about a month. And then he reached out to me and said, hey, I've got this, people keep asking me about consulting with my book, Work the System. And he's about a generation older than me. And he said, Josh, why don't you work with these people? Because he didn't want to do the consulting. So we just gave it a try. And we've been working together for about the last 9 years. I bought him out of the company very recently, but I started off as a contractor, then an employee, then a partner, and then bought him out recently. But we've had a great relationship. He's been a great mentor. And the big aha moment for, I mean, just to wrap this all together, for me was that I was looking back at my old consulting jobs, you know, 10 years ago, and realizing that they just kept needing me. I'd keep going back. And if I left them too long, they would go back into old habits. And a couple of them I helped through bankruptcy. And then 2 years later, they went bankrupt. Gosh. Right. And I realized, I thought I was doing really good work, but it wasn't sticking. It wasn't lasting. And what I was doing was not scalable. And so I realized that his method really not only solved the problems of business, but it made it resilient. And so I got really excited about it, and the rest is history.
So have you seen, what you were just saying reminded me of that this TED Talk, I think it's 3 minutes long, with Derek Sivers, and it's about the first follower. Have you seen this?
I've not seen it.
Oh, you would love it. I'll send it to you after the podcast. The bottom line, the short of it is, it looks like a Grateful Dead type concert, like big grass, a lot of people right on the lawn. There's one guy who's by himself dancing crazy, and nobody's joining him until one person recognizes it, goes over, starts dancing with him. And then that first follower starts bringing over all the other people. Like first 5 people come over, and then 20, and then 100, then everybody is dancing with this guy. And I'm not saying Sam is crazy, but I think there's this huge value in being that first person to say, this not only worked for me, this is awesome, and we can scale this and grow this, and we can use it to help other people. And that just, well, your story just reminded me of that video, of being that first person to be like, I'm going to take that and I'm going to apply it over here.
Yeah. And I know it now that you tell me, I have seen that video. It's a great video. And, yeah, and you know, this idea of putting systems in place to fix the business, it's been around a while, maybe, you know, a couple thousand years, right? So it's not totally new, but I think maybe every generation just needs to re-remember it or figure it out. But Sam, you know, had this dream as talked about in the book, and once he saw his business as separate systems as opposed to just, you know, a difficult business, which it was. I mean, he was about to go bankrupt. He was about to, you know, have a heart attack because of his 100-hour work weeks. I mean, he had this dream, and then, you know, he went to work. He actually built these systems, and then he built himself freedom. He built a great business. He built a great lifestyle, and it really has impacted a lot of people. And you know, what better way to create a system of helping others than to write a book? And then now, you know, we do the coaching, consulting, and now next generation is, I'm, you know, certifying consultants all over the world to then spread it even further. Because, you know, when I first got into consulting, my mentor said, Josh, don't work with anybody who is doing less than $100 million a year in sales. They're not going to have any money to pay you. They're not going to be worth
it.
Yeah,
I've heard that too.
Headaches. Yeah. And just don't bother. And I said, but what about like the 98% of companies that are 99% that are never going to get there? And they're the ones that need the most help. And he's like, just trust me, Josh. I've been doing this a long time. Just don't do it. And it really bothered me because, you know, my dad's a small business owner. My father-in-law was. And, you know, I just realized they're the ones that need the help. And there must be a way to help them in a scalable way that actually financially works. And, you know, 15 years ago, the internet kind of made that possible. And that's what I've been really trying to do, is figure out how did I distribute the best knowledge of big companies down to the small ones so that they can get there too.
So one of the things that was really eye-opening for me, and as I mentioned in my intro and told you offline, I was super excited about this interview because my right hand, Laura, found the book, read it, and then made me go get it and read it. And then kind of we started to implement stuff. And then your team reached out, and I was like, yes, this is like personal coaching. This is fantastic in a podcast format. But the thing that really stuck with me and that I think hit me personally was Sam's story, and also some of the stuff I found on your website that really made me realize that my business, my systems were working me. They weren't working for me. They were actually working me into the ground. So I'm curious, kind of, because I think a lot of times we don't realize we're being driven, overworked, driven to exhaustion, that the systems are not working for us, that the issue isn't us, right? That it's the process or the system, until it's almost too late, until we've kind of fallen off the cliff. So I'm curious, in all the clients you've worked with and just your incredible experience, what are the top, you know, three or five signs to look for to know that the business or the system is working me and I need to do something about it?
Yeah. Well, there's warning signs, right? Like, you can't take a vacation, you're working the weekends, you're working nights, early mornings. And it really has to do with hours of work. If you're owning a business and you can't take a few weeks off and you're working and you have to work more than 40 hours just to keep the wheels on, then your systems are working you, or your business is working you. And people have different levels. Some of my clients want to work 20 hours a week. Some of them want to work 50. But, you know, if you're working and you don't want to be working, that's when your systems are working you, right? And I often do this this test, and it's a little bit tedious, but I'll have the owner write down every single thing that they do in the course of a couple of days, all the tedious things. And we'll go through it and we'll find out a lot of things they shouldn't be doing, a lot of things they should be delegating, a lot of things they should be automating, a lot of things they should be, you know, not really involved in. And then I'll ask the question, well, so who's the owner of this business? And then they'll say, well, I am. And I say, well, who's actually doing things that an owner would do? You know, looking for financing, developing new products, right, new services.
Strategy, the big stuff.
Strategy, you know, all the things that actually matter, culture, vision, that, you know, no one's doing that piece. And so you basically have a company with no owner. And this could be the same with, you know, those managers and leaders listening to this as well, is that, you know, departments in large companies, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Is they end up doing the work and it's like, well, who's managing this department? And no one is, right? And that's where the results are a problem. And so the big message in Sam's book, and it's repeated as this concept of the replacement, but you want to, you know, multiply what you do. You want to replace what you do. And the best way is to codify it into little recipes for how to do each thing in your business so that it can multiply and distribute and not be based on you being the bottleneck. Whether you're the owner, your manager, supervisor, likely you are bottlenecking the potential of yourself and your department. And oftentimes people don't realize it.
Do you think that bottlenecking is kind of, I guess, what's the reason for that? Is it, and it could be all the above, this isn't really an either or question. Is it because there's too much work or not enough staff, or, you know, we're all trying to do more with less? Is it a need to feel busy, valuable, in control? Like, why do we allow ourselves to get to that place?
Well, it's a lot of reasons for a lot of different people, but ultimately it all becomes a habit, right? A status quo habit. Eventually you've kind of reached the potential you think you should be at, or you've assembled or accumulated the amount of things or stuff you think you should be doing. And once you've grabbed on to those various pieces, you stay there, right? You kind of max out your time, you max out your energy, you max out your thinking. You're like, I don't want to do any more. I can't really go any further. I'm just going to kind of stay here and survive. And so for some folks, you know, that's at 60 grand a year or 80 grand a year, or 150 grand a year, whatever the dollar amount is. And then they stay there because they're comfortable. And I try to jar them out of their comfort level and say, like, are you really comfortable here? Like, is this really where you want to be? Do you see yourself here in 10 years? And as you know, to get someone to move, they have to actually really not like where they're at and really love this concept of where they could be. And that's kind of how I get them to shake out of it. But without seeing a future of yourself that's bigger or greater, people will just, they'll just stay in that spot. And, you know, comfort, they become experts in the thing they do. They're afraid of losing it. They don't know what they would do if they weren't doing the thing they were doing. All sorts of reasons, ego, identity. I mean, that's where coaching comes in, is right? It's going to figure out why do you feel like you have to do this? I not to ramble on, but I had this one chiropractor I work with, and I coach the wife. The wife manages the business, and she was working 7 days a week, horrible hours, and they're making really good money. And it came to the fact that I realized her whole personality, her worth, her identity was in being a successful owner of this business. And she didn't realize that being a successful owner of the business didn't actually mean being it all the time. It means not
being
quite
the opposite.
And once she got that, she's like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. And so that was the trigger for her.
You know, it's it reminds me of a little while back. I was traveling. I was going from city to city to city, which I don't mind doing in spurts, but I was in a position where I was doing it all the time. And I'll never forget, I opened up the elevator to a hallway and could not for the life of me remember which room was mine. I could not remember. And I went from door to door with my little key card, waiting for that green light, because I was like, it's here somewhere. I just don't know where. And it was in that moment that I just got so fed up that I finally was like, I cannot be the one on the road all the time. I have got to figure out a different model for this. Do you find that sometimes it's like hitting that tipping point of like, oh my gosh, I just can't do this anymore? Because I do think, to your point about comfort, oftentimes I think it's the devil we know. So we'll stay here because I know how to survive in this loop. I don't like the loop, but I know how to survive in it. And it really sometimes isn't until we get to that place of like, I can't do this anymore, that we moved. Is that kind of what you find, or are there other triggers for movement?
Definitely, yes. And so the clients I work with, oftentimes they won't share that at first. I mean, they're like, yeah, my company's going pretty well. I just want a little help.
That's the ego talking, company. Right?
And then I find out later, you know, they have a nervous breakdown. They're just in the hospital. The spouse is going to leave them. You know, they couldn't make payroll. I mean, something really traumatic shook them up. I've had a couple clients where their key manager died.
Oh, geez.
And then I started working with them a month later, and I didn't know that. So, you know, like, things shake them up and rattle them. They're like, okay, I actually have to get serious about that. And really, I mean, those are my best clients. I mean, it's easy. I just, here's what you do. They do it. I'm like, wow, that was easy. And so sometimes those traumas can be blessings in disguise, but I mean, no one wants them to happen, but they really do help people take an inventory. And I try to push that with our messaging and marketing, but you know, a real life trauma always works a lot better.
One of the things that you talk about that I really appreciate is kind of that first step being not just the system itself, but getting into the system mindset. How does one achieve that?
Yeah, well, it's described in really good detail in Sam's book, but the first thing is we call it get it outside and slightly elevated. And it's a little bit mystical, but basically you do have to get away from your business. You have to close your eyes and see yourself as above the business, kind of looking down the bird's eye view. And then instead of seeing a business, you have to visualize the pieces. And we actually help companies write out those pieces, like answering the phone, locking the doors up at night, turning the security alarm on, mixing the dough if you're a baker, you know, all these separate things. And you have to see, okay, here are all the pieces. Do you see them? You see how they're separate. And then we go through an exercise of actually writing them down, because everything in your business, 99.999% of it, somebody else could do. It's not really that hard. It's not rocket science. It's just the assemblage of all of it together is only something you could do, because you've concocted the most complex scenario ever. I worked with a client once. He just said, Josh, I don't want your whole program. I just want one procedure written, just one. I said, okay, no problem. And he was he ran a nuclear power plant repair company. And so,
that is not what I was expecting you to say, by the way. That's not a very common.
Not a common. I work with a variety of clients. And so this particular guy, said, just start bidding our proposal process. And it turned out there were like 100 different really complex research, due diligence pieces that had to all fit perfectly, because this is a multi-million dollar proposal and you can't just wing it. And he's like, you know, for some reason, I'm the only one who could do this here. And I broke it out into the pieces. And he's like, oh, of course. But then I said, hey, this purse Jim can do, this one Sally can do, this one, and these ones are easy, and this one is auto. And then he realized, oh yeah, anybody can do this, but not anyone can do it all when it's in your mind. And that's a big part of the secret, is that in your mind, things are complex, but when they're written down, Then others can come in and give you ideas. And you talk about innovation. I mean, it gives people to innovate. Whenever someone documents what they do, they're going to find ways to make it better, to innovate, to find hacks, shortcuts. And that's where the magic is. And it's just most people, they just don't want to go there.
So it's, I love that story because it reminds me of as I was telling you, right, Laura and I both read the book and we started really focusing on what are our processes, what are our systems, where do we have gaps? And I think from an innovation perspective, actually, it allowed us to do that in two ways. So one is now we have a weekly meeting and at the end of every meeting, we spend 15 minutes on the systems. Did it work? Did it not work? Where do we have gaps? Where do we need to improve? So we're innovating on the systems all the time where we never did that before. And because of that, as you can imagine, things run a lot smoother. We're getting things done faster and better, kind of all the outputs of having a really smart system. And really, to your point, that mindset, I think the second part that's been a really nice output of that I don't know if it surprised me, but I don't know if I expected it to this level. Because my brain and the team's brain is not so filled with what has to happen next, it's all documented in the system that we use to kind of keep track of all of it, we actually have more room to innovate too. So there's more space in our brains because that is taken off our plates. We don't have to worry about the system. The system is working and we've documented it. So I think, I don't know if you've experienced that with other clients, but those two things allowed us the freedom to be more innovative. And I don't know, like I said, that second one I was expecting.
I need to get you on my podcast. Yeah, this is exactly, this is right. Yeah, this is perfect. Because people think, oh, if I put systems, then it's going to be bureaucratic. I won't be able
to innovate. Right, it's quite the opposite for us.
It is the opposite, right? Because now you can actually analyze what you're doing. And almost all innovation is micro innovation. And with most companies, the innovations in people's brains, they can't execute on it. And if they do, they're going to forget it. They're going to do it haphazard.
Right.
It's going to fall away in a few months. And you're really codifying it into your business. And you're right. Then there's less mistakes. So even more time to innovate. And it's not the sexy kind of innovation. Like I was working with a client just an hour ago, right? And she was talking about her onboarding process when they do executive coaching. And she's like, you know what? I think we should send all of our new clients a little gift. And that would be something new. And then also we're going to put in our calendar when's their birthday and when they signed up so we can, on an annual basis, touch base with them. That was it. So she added two sentences to her onboarding process. Now, you multiply that, those two things are going to definitely yield clients sticking around longer. It's going to definitely yield more referrals. It's definitely going to yield a better experience. And those two little tweaks you just wrote down are now encoded in the business. That could be $10,000-$20,000. Could be more than that in additional business revenue in the next few years, just taking 5 minutes to add those extra few sentences. So, you know, that's not like as exciting as going to a big event and having some futuristic idea. It's just making a better business. So.
Well, I like your point about micro or non-sexy innovation. That's really where we focus too. I think people think that innovation has to be the latest and greatest technology or like something super disruptive. But to your point, it can be simple process improvements too. It kind of goes across a lot of things. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because you kind of hinted at it with the story you just gave, is that mindset and really the process is really, if I hear you right and I'm interpreting what I've learned correctly, it's really about getting down to that nitty-gritty level. And I think that's a little scary. It was scary for me. So I would consider myself a less organized person overall, although I'm not sure that's totally true anymore, but it used to be anyway. But there's that level of nitty-gritty that is scary to get to. And I guess I'm curious, number one, why do we have that resistance to like putting it all out there to that level and when it comes to the system? And then I just love some examples of how that like that minute level has actually helped someone build their business and I think take back a little bit of their life, because that's the other implied half of this, isn't it? Is you don't have to work 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of great questions in there. Let's see if I can get to them all. So in Sam's book, he talks about one system that he wrote, which is a procedure for how to deposit checks into the bank.
Which right? should be so obvious, right? Like you go to the bank, I don't know.
yeah, exactly. And so he used to just wing it And winging it actually meant they would lose checks and have problems and this and that and friction. And so writing that one procedure, he immediately saw the benefit, saw the time, and then he got excited about it. Now, the unique thing about Sam is he likes to write. He likes to write procedures. He likes to give them the details. He's an engineer, engineering mindset. That is very unusual for people like you and me and entrepreneurs, managers.
Yeah.
We're not. And so, but we have to believe in that strategy and that that as a core value, even though it's not a skill set that we have. And so a lot of the entrepreneurs that I work with and managers I work with, they are not good at this kind of work. They are not good at the details. They're not good at the actually putting the systems together to distributing them. Because there's a lot of pieces. You got to identify them. You got to write them. You
right.
got to improve them, tweak them, pass them out, train with them, update them, measure them, hold people accountable, police them. It there's a lot of pieces there. And so my whole thing is I want to get you to believe it. I want you to run through the numbers so you see for sure it's going to work. And then I want you to bring people on your team who can do the work with you or for you, right? Because your skill set as the owner manager doesn't need to be in writing procedures. It needs to be in leadership. And so, but you want to have a business that has that infrastructure to help you go to the next level. It doesn't mean you have to actually do it yourself. And that's always the fallacy is, oh, I have a new idea. Now I have to do it myself. Now you have a new idea. Now you have to, you know, utilize the strengths of your team. And oftentimes your team, and that's why, you know, that's why I built our company is to help people do that. We have, you know, we have writers, we have consultants, we have people who do that for you, because I know you might have the idea for years and years and years, but you won't execute on it because people procrastinate if they don't like to do something or if they're no good at something, and owners don't like to write procedures and they're no good at it. So they procrastinate.
Yeah, procrastination is the enemy of all things in a lot of ways. I'm curious from a leader perspective. Like what's percolating in the back of my head is, okay, I'm all about this. I want to get all this stuff, all this process down on paper, everything from our, you know, how we do our team meetings to how we deposit checks. Love that example. So, but I can imagine, and I'd love if you have a story around this or a client, you know, imagine there being some resistance of like, are you trying to micromanage me now? Like, why do we need to write down everything I do? Why are we going to this level? Have you seen that? And if yes, what advice do you have to get over that hurdle, whether they're an owner or a leader inside a company, of kind of getting their team on board with it too?
Yes. Yeah. And this is, it is a challenge. And I work with a lot of folks. One of the easiest ways to make sure everyone buys in is that as you're implementing or rolling this out, is you end up firing somebody within the first month. And that seems to work really well. But if you're not interested in that approach, you got to get them to buy in. And I'll try to figure out who the alpha is in the management team. And as I'm developing this concept of putting systems in place, I try to find out where their biggest pain point is. I have work on a system with them. And then once they say, gosh, I don't have to do that anymore, or we don't have mistakes anymore, or now I just saved myself some time, whatever it is, my conversion rates have gone up in my sales. Once that alpha is really likes it and sees the benefit, everyone else will fall in line. But I have to figure out who that is. So there's kind of some team dynamic aspects of it. But there's it takes someone who has experience and skill to read the culture to know, because most people will give you lip service and they'll say, yeah, that's a good idea, we should do that. But you know, you work with them for 6 months and they don't produce a single procedure, right? So their activities will show actually they don't really like the idea. And the one thing that owner can do beyond just having a clear strategy, having clear principles, leading them well, is the owner can give them time to do it. They can give them incentives to do it. And those two things work out really well. We typically do competitions, and they need to give them a vision that includes them moving up the ranks. So if the employees think, if I systemize these things, I'm going to be fired because they won't need me anymore.
Right.
That's the wrong thing. It needs to be, actually, our company's going somewhere great and we want to take you with us, but if you're not going to do this, you're not buying into this vision that actually involves expansion, that involves a multiplication, that involves producing more value in the world. And that is the important thing. If the owner says, hey, we're going to stay exactly the same size, but I want you to document everything, then the employee should be a little bit concerned, because we'll probably find somebody who's costs half as much, maybe they just have a high school degree instead of a master's degree. I mean, case in point, I was working with a commercial appraisal firm, and we were paying somebody, I wasn't, but the client was paying somebody $100,000 a year to review these plans and these documents to come up with appraisals. And we worked on the procedure for how to review these documents, and they moved it down to administrative assistant, who she was getting paid, this is California, maybe like, I don't know, $15 an hour. And she did all of the work. And then the engineer just stamped it. And so in that case, this particular engineer wasn't worried because there's more things to do. But it's a huge benefit, right? I mean, most of the things we do, and actually several engineering firms I've worked with, that's what we do. We take the senior level work, we document. Junior or intern engineers do the majority of it. The seniors end up approving it. And there's your spread. But if you're one of the top people and you make yourself important, you're not going to be let go.
What, in your experience, has there been any clients of yours that kind of when you've walked in the door and learned their situation or walked them through the process, any learnings that came out of that that surprised you about really setting up a system that works for your business and for you?
Gosh, surprising. I've lots of surprising things. I mean, I had one client where we started documenting things and we realized that his best man in his wedding, the guy who was handling his finances, had stolen $1 million.
Oh, gosh.
We found that out. That was interesting. You know, lots of things. I worked with one company that was heavily involved in the marijuana industry, and we realized that no matter how detailed you make the systems, if the people, which are your primary systems, are not clear-headed, it does not matter.
Right.
So we learned that. So I can tell you all sorts of interesting stories about it. So, I mean, you got to go in there with a pragmatic approach. And I, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. A great business is not built in a day. Companies that go really fast, it doesn't stick. It falls apart. Companies that go too slow, it fizzles out. They lose the momentum. And so you just have to say, you know, our company does X, but as the engine that we're building is these systems, we're just going to build a little bit each month. We're going to absorb it. We're going to improve. We're going to grow. And, you know, Sam's team is still working on systems at Centratel up in Oregon 20 years later. They're still innovating. They're still improving. And that's why, I mean, he hasn't worked in his business for a number of years. He's in his 70s now, but his company makes him more money every month and has made him more money every month for the last 15 years. It just keeps growing. It gets more profitable. He's in an industry that usually gets a 3% net profit. He's in the 30s because it's just so much more efficient than his competition. Like, they're not even close. I mean, there's no way they could catch up with him at this point.
Well, I think the before and after on his business is a real testament to why systems matter so much to that level, and kind of really understanding that, you know, the business is this larger ecosystem with all these other smaller systems that make it up to get to that bigger ecosystem. I want to ask you a question about something you said, though, about people being clear-headed, not about that specifically, but just about people in general. You know, there are these old stories of Walt Disney having, you know, in Disneyland, you know, they built all the pathways, you know, cement walkways and whatnot. And then he'd watch people and see where they actually kind of cut across the grass. And then he would adjust, right, and build the path where people naturally wanted to go. And I'm curious, in your work, so you set up the systems, right? People follow it, they don't follow it, you optimize it, kind of all of that goes into the mix. How much of things working or not working is the system needing to improve versus the right people then carrying out that system? And hopefully that question isn't too general, because I'm sure there's some of case-by-case study in that too.
Yes. Well, the first point to make is that the systems of your business are already in operation. They're happening right now. They're just organic, right? So, I mean, you are selling, you are closing, you are performing your goods or services. I mean, things are happening. Those systems are happening. You just don't know what they are. And so, first off is to say, hey, they're happening. I see them. Let's actually document them and make them better. So that's the first piece. So I believe in that whole thing is like, see where they're walking, see what they're doing. When we document our systems with companies, we say, write down what you're doing right now, but with a head, you know, with the knowledge that you should conform it to the strategy and the principles and try to make it better as you do it. And so that's the first piece is don't try to do a dramatic shift like, hey, we've always sold, door to door, but now we're going to do it on the phones using this new system. Those almost always fail. Right. So I start with what's working, what's happening now. And yes, to your second question is that some people do not thrive in environments like this at all. And so whoever is your superstar, they can solve any problem on the fly. They're just great in the moment. You know, you give them a problem, they just figure it out. Those people are not always good in a company that actually is well run. So what you have to do with those people, because oftentimes you don't want to lose them, is you have to move them into a different position. So like you would move them, I call it quarantining. It's probably not the best term, but you move them into a place where they're not going to go up the operations, because they will do things on the fly. They'll shift things. They'll try things new, and they're going to screw up your operations. And so I will move them over to the side and say, hey, you're going to be in this area over here, and you can kind of do things your own way and innovate, but you're not going to be part of the core business that is actually doing things the way we've documented. And that's how you keep those people, but you can still leverage some of their skills. This is typically like an outside salesperson or somebody who's doing new product development. They can usually stick around, but if it's your administrative assistant or somebody who really needs to be in the machine doing the work like everyone else, then they end up leaving because they just can't stand the repetition of it, and they don't just doesn't excite them. It's not their personality, and so they typically are expensive to begin with, and they're not necessary when the systems are there.
How do you think about balancing kind of the system and what we were talking about earlier with the innovation? Because I think that kind of implementing this across our business over here at Launch Street has really freed us up to be more innovative. And we're doing it in the process itself, but also just overall in the work, because that stuff isn't cluttering our brain. We're being more efficient when we kind of figure out better systems. How do you think about balancing those two things?
Well, I think that you should have a plan, right? And the plan is, we call it a procedure project plan. And so we will list out all the things that we think would be great to document someday. And then we just put it in sequence and priority. And so, hey, this is one that's essential. Let's do this one first. And you might have a list of 100. And the bottom 20, you may never actually get to, which is fine. You're just going to work on the ones that are most important, most relevant, or they're kind of in your face right now. And beyond that, I think that it needs to just be like an undercurrent to your business culture. I don't, some of my clients, they get really, really obsessed and like, we're going to systemize everything. And I realized, well, the first priority is that, you know, you serve your customers and you make a profit. So let's make sure that's number one. And then let's make sure that this new operational framework supports that. Because I've met some people who have, they got hundreds of procedures, but they got no money. And right. So I want to make sure they put first things first and realize that this infrastructure needs to serve the greater good of their business. And if it's not in service to that, it's an unnecessary complication that you shouldn't be bothered with. That's probably the way to think about it. And there's no like yes or no. With a lot of clients who are concerned about this, I will have them right after each procedure they complete, how much time, how much money, what improvements, like what was the big win from doing this procedure? And as long as that big win is always 10 times more valuable than the effort they put into producing it, then we know they're on the right track. But when they start working on the procedures and it took them, like I had one guy who wrote a procedure. This was at a psychiatrist practice. He wrote a procedure. It took him 10 hours to make this procedure. And it was a procedure for how to tape up a box to ship something in a box. And he did videos. He did intros, outros, cuts, jump cuts, sound effects, jokes in the middle of this video. He produced this massive 10-minute video on how to tape a box. And he thought it was great. And everyone thought this was great. And I was like, this is... Anyways, long story short, it was ridiculous. Yeah. And he ended up being let go. But he didn't understand the concept is this procedures need to serve the the our customers and provide value. If they're not doing that, they really are a colossal waste of time.
Well, it makes me wonder if that's the tipping point from systems to bureaucracy, right? Mm-hmm. If it stops serving the business. I want to ask you a question about you were saying about serving the business. How do you know what segments or things to prioritize in terms of figuring out your systems versus what maybe can wait or is actually frankly irrelevant?
Yes. Well, I'd like to give you a scientific answer because there's a couple ways to do it. But what tends to happen the most is what's on fire or urgent or in our face.
Yeah.
So it will be, gosh, you know, we're going to go to a conference next week. We should probably write a system before we go there. And then that procedure will all of a sudden get done. So it really is a top of mind. Hey, we're in the middle of doing a podcast. We should probably do a procedure for sound checks. And then they kind of happen based on immediate need, which I think is great because you can see the benefit. But beyond that, it's getting the owners, leaders, managers out of the day-to-day. That those are essential. Those people have to be the ones leading. If they're doing administrative things that are slowing them down, that's killing the business. And so I want to make sure we get those things down first. Then it's going to be the ones that are going to cost, you know, save the most time, save the most money, which are typically things that are done on a daily basis. So like when I work with dental offices, it's like, hey, how do you schedule appointments? We should get better and faster at that. So we close more appointments, we do it faster, and we can do 100 calls a day instead of 60. Right? That's an immediate, it's happening so often, we should really
dial it in. Right. It actually frees up room to do something important like sales.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reminded of something that I wanted to ask you a question about. So this was a while ago back. I was on vacation with my ex-husband and their family, and I was sitting on the beach with my ex-sister-in-law, and I just will never forget. We were on vacation and she was like furiously, you know, answering emails and had to take a few calls. And even though they knew she was on vacation, and every email started with, "I'm sorry to bother you, but I know you're on vacation, but," right? And we got into this whole conversation about how the culture across the organization really was not healthy that way. Like they really overworked everybody, and the systems did not really support, that wasn't the language we used then, but the systems didn't support things like taking a vacation, right? Or not being available for a few days. What advice do you have for people who maybe they're not the owner, right? So they don't have the clout to change everything, but they can change it in their little world. What advice do you have for them when they're kind of battling that overall culture that's maybe making the system work against everybody? And I see this all the time. Sadly, I see it a lot. It's really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Great question. And it's challenging when you're in the middle. I'll help companies create what's called departmental directives. So even if the whole company is this way, I mean, you have to conform to the company, but you can create your own little mini culture within that. And so that would be, it's kind of a miniature version of a strategic objective and operating principles. And so you're basically saying, hey, as a department, here's where we're going. And here's how we're going to get there. And as we get there, here are the principles we're going to follow. A principle of, you know, respecting each other's time, a principle of working a week ahead, a principle of whatever that might be, you know, duplicating yourself, cross-training, whatever the, you know, those things in your department. And if you follow those principles, then we're going to have a great culture interdepartmentally, even though the rest of the company is a little crazy. And that can work. The leader of that department is going to need to kind of play traffic cop. You got to block things to destroy that culture. And they can certainly communicate that to the other departments and say, hey, look, our department is run great. What do you guys think? Maybe you should do the same thing. And they can, try to stop the interruptions to their culture as much as possible, but never perfectly. But I would say, you know, if you have that kind of control over your department, you should definitely do it. People will be happier. It'll be more profitable and you will move up the ranks because people will notice. And I've seen that again and again.
I like that. And I also think that the side effect of that is other teams will take notice, and over time, right, that will create a ripple effect out, hopefully. So where other teams will start to play the way you're playing, because they'll see how productive, happy, and thriving, right, your team is.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason not to do it. It's only going to help your prospects, and it's going to help you have to work less. I mean, because your team's going to be more vibrant and cross-trained, and you'll naturally just get more done than the other departments.
So Josh, when you think about your business, what are the systems that you put into place, like the top two or three that really changed your trajectory?
Yes. Well, this is a great question. And I'm going to have to answer it in a kind of a unique way because we have totally shifted our business in the last few months. And when this thing airs, it's going to be even more different. Because I used to be the guy, the sole licensee of the Work System Method. So I was doing the coaching, doing the consulting, and getting paid well to do that. And without the ability or future to do anything beyond that. And so after I bought up the company recently, about the last 6 months, I've hired 8 new people. So the big system that we are continuing to tweak right now is our onboarding system. So that every new person knows our strategy, knows our principles, knows our procedures, knows where to find our procedures, and they can immediately assimilate to this culture that's very unique. And so that's what I'm working on right now is trying to build a team from the ground up who believes in this. And the second thing that I'm working on that we've spent last month and a half building, it's like 30 hours of content, is getting a distributed team of consultants out doing what I do. So instead of me taking on clients, yeah, I'm getting them out in clients. And that's the big shift. And knowing that, how do I take, you know, 10 plus years of consulting and put into someone's brain as quick as a way as possible and double check and test and quality control. And so that has been a big undertaking, but it's going to be essential for the future. And so we've put that all online and built a whole training platform. And I think that maybe the big takeaway for everybody here is that I think a lot of employees, managers, they roll their eyes at training, but you really have to, invest in your people and their skills. And if you don't, they're not going to invest in themselves. Almost no one does. I was working with a recruiting firm and, you know, me and the owner, we were looking at her big wall of books, you know, floor to ceiling wall of books, all these great books in here. And I were talking about this book and that book and how it just, you know, was just really great. And she's saying, you know, Josh, and I said to her, I bet your employees love this. I mean, with this great resource here, but they're checking all these books all the time. It's probably really helping your team grow. And she said, you know, and she'd been in the business for 30 years. She said in the last 30 years, only one person has asked her one time to borrow one book. Huh. Even though she tells them they can do it anytime. And that just totally dumbfounded me. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking, that's crazy. And these weren't, I mean, these are sharp people. They were paid commission. They were making good money as recruiters. And they just never crossed their mind. They could sharpen their skills. And so as a leader, you have to be the one to invest in your team, to hold them to a higher level, to encourage them to reach their potential and know that it's not natural. It's natural for you and for me, but it's not natural to most people. But so I would say structure it, make it happen an hour or two a week, every week, and you will have an amazing company.
You know, one of the things that an old boss of mine used to do back in the day when I was working in brand strategy and innovation in New York City is at every team meeting, I think it was every Monday, we were encouraged to bring in something that we found that was interesting, something trendy, something unique, something, you know, that was just of interest to us in innovation in the consumer goods space. But she systematized it, right? So she would make people responsible for it because in the beginning, it was just like, hey, Josh, you know, or team, if that's great, if you find something, bring it in. Then it was like every month you had to be responsible for sharing at least once. So it didn't force you to find something on a weekend or during the week if you didn't find it. But in a month, you can, in your world, right, you could probably find something innovative that could spark some ideas for the team. But she's, to your point, she systematized it. And once she did that, we were bringing in stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It's simple, doable. I mean, it's not rocket science. Any of us could do that. It just takes a leader who builds a system.
Yeah, but I do think what you're saying in there is really important, that professional development is actually a system too. We can't let people, leaders are constantly disappointed when their teams aren't out there finding every professional development thing for themselves. The reality is they're focused on doing great work. And so the professional development side often goes to the wayside if we don't systematize it. So I appreciate that you bring that up because I think that's one of those things that we look at and go, oh, we don't need to systematize that. But what I hear from you and kind of after reading the book, it's really everything.
Well, I mean, every part of your life, I mean, you do often, you brush your teeth every day, you go on date nights. I mean, there's things you do. Why not do them as well as possible? Right.
You know what? That's a great way to think about systems. What do you think is the biggest barrier to making the systems work for you?
Biggest barrier. I think the biggest barrier is to not seize control of them, is to be passive. Right. So, I mean, whatever, I brought up data, you could passively go on data, or you could say, hey, you know what? These are the things we really want to accomplish. You can passively, you know, make a sales call, or you could say, these, you know, I'm going to distinctly make these things happen. I think that seeing the separate pieces, realizing that you actually have some control, and holding yourself to that high standard, that is a big thing when people work with me, is they start to work on some systems, but they haven't raised their own personal standards much higher. So they don't really feel the need to come up with a specific plan for doing anything. And, you know, it's not fun to hear, but, you know, once you take each piece and then you say, okay, this is the piece, what is the main goal or the main objective of this piece? And then you write it down and say, oh, okay, well, if that's the main goal, I should probably be doing this differently. I've been doing this wrong my whole life. And that's, you know, that's often the aha moment, is you say, gosh, I've been doing this slightly wrong for 30 years. You know, I'm an idiot. I, you know, that's where the aha happens. So I think it's the raising the standards and realizing that you are in control, and, you know, there's no replays, you know, time is running. So the time is now. It's either now or never. So you might as well just get started.
Well, I think what you just said there about that we passively kind of go through these different things in our lives and our work is really important and powerful. And I think that can apply to everything from health to work, that we just, I don't know. I think that's how we get into the trap of the systems working us, because we don't actively go after it to figure out how to do it in an efficient and smart way. We let it take over us. And I love how you said that, though. Passively, I think, is a great way to think of it.
And I think innately people don't want to be held accountable. And once something's in writing, they can say, oh gosh, I failed, or I made a mistake, or I'm wrong. And that's not, it's a different, you have to obviously approach it differently. Whereas you have a standard and you enjoy growing, you enjoy the refinement. You say, gosh, this is, you know, like I'd like to think of a refining fire. Like, yeah, this is going to be hard, but I like hard things. I enjoy getting better. Oh, I didn't quite reach the goal there. That's good, because now I enjoy what I learned through it. And so if you actually, you know, enjoy, I like to call it an abundant life. People like to use that word differently, or a full life, but that is how you have a full life, actually, is enjoying that.
This might be a loaded question, but do you think it's better to focus on, kind of to your point, doing your best, working the system, constantly improving, or the goal? And I guess where I'm trying to kind of go with that question is, I think, you know, there's kind of two sets of people that I've seen. There's people who are like, I am here to improve. I learned so much today. This is how I'm going to do it differently. I'm really just, you know, I'm all about, it's almost a little bit more present focused. Mm-hmm. And then there's people who are much more like, I need to make $1 million. I need to, and I'm not saying one's right or one's wrong, but just in your world of working the system, which is a better place to be if one is better?
Both important. And I think the one who is trying to, I use the phrase profit all the way through. One is always trying to grow each day. That's going to be a better long-term plan. There's a great talk by Simon Sinek. He's got a new book called The Infinite Game. And if you're playing the infinite game, you're going to be always improving. If you're playing this quarter by quarter game for your investors, you're never going to actually, you're going to lose in the short term, or sorry, the long term. Yeah. And there's another book on, I'm holding it right now. It's called John Wooden on Leadership.
Oh, uh-huh. The basketball coach.
Yeah, great book. And anybody who wants to understand the importance of systems, I mean, I think he's like the winningest basketball coach of all time. And he would focus, you know, first practice is how to put your socks on. You know, then it's how is the best way to tie your shoes. You know, these are college level basketball players. And then it's what is the best way to dribble the ball with your, and he went through every single thing, and he said, and he tracked everything. And he said, if you are the best at dribbling and you are the best at shooting, you are the best at passing every single piece, you're going to win all the games. So, and of course you want to win, but he didn't focus so much on the win. He focused on all the pieces that would make the win. And that was it. Cause he knew, and this is the whole premise of Sam's book, is that if you are great at all the pieces of your business, you stick them together, you're going to have a great business. So focus on the pieces, which you actually have kind of have a lot of control over, instead of this, you know, I want to have a great business. Well,
right.
You know, that's actually made up of 300 great systems.
Right.
And
right.
That is our whole, and that's what we do.
I love that. It's tying your shoes. It's kind of like, how do you be the best at going to the bank and depositing checks? Same kind of thing, right? Like all the way down to that granular level. I love it. So before we close out, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Go to workthesystem.com. There you can get the book for free. We've got resources, podcasts, coaching, consulting, you name it. And our whole philosophy there is that we want you to go from, you know, working in the business to working on the business to being a true owner. And of course, some of the managers here won't get to that last level, but that's where we have all the resources there.
Well, and I think you can from the same kind of mindset and outcome, just not from the same position, right, of owner. Well, I just have to say thank you for coming on. Before I ask you the final question, and let me just, you know, say to all of us on Launch Street that having implemented the content from the book and having kind of dug into Josh's website and work, that this has made a tremendous impact on our business too. We were stuck for sure at one level, and we were exhausted. And this is we are still in the throes of it, but it has without a doubt helped us transform and get to the next level without overwhelming ourselves, which I think is the key there. Because I think oftentimes we think about growth, we think about more work and different work and struggling. But the truth is, it can be done without that frustration if the system is working for you. But it's pretty impossible to get there without that. So I appreciate kind of all the work that you do out there. So my final question is this is my Oprah couch question, as I call it. What's your final piece of advice for innovators on Launch Street?
Gosh, well, where do I go with this? Well, everyone knows John Maxwell, the leadership coach, written more books than most anyone. I really like, and this totally fits with what we've been talking about, this concept of you're going to overestimate what you can do in a day, but you're going to underestimate what you can do in a lifetime or in a long period of time. And so don't beat yourself up when you don't accomplish everything you want to do that day, but just make a few steps forward. And don't just make them in a way that's going to blow away the next day, but make them in a way that's going to actually be tangible. It's going to stick at something to build upon. And that's why, so build a system each day and you can build on it. And that's how you get an amazing future.
I love it. And that's what we are trying to do. So Josh, thank you so much for coming on. As I've said, it's a little bit of fangirl, but I think the work that you do is so important and has helped us tremendously. So I know it'll help everyone else too. So thank you.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.